Well, welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Kintec studio on a Canucks game day. They're taking on the Florida Panthers in Florida at 4 o'clock Pacific time this afternoon. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Of course, we'll continue to preview the Canucks and the Panthers tonight, but right now, very pleased to be joined on the line. He is a senior NHL writer at ESPN. It is Greg Wyshynski. Wish, what's going on, man?
Oh, nothing much, you know. Going to the Mets game tonight. That's exciting.
Fun. Are we going to get a non-blowout here at some point?
I was going to say there's nothing that will enhance the pain of them going down 3-1 more than freezing my cojones off in the upper deck tonight. So
being there in person to see them go down 3-1. Nothing feels better than that.
Is it not beautiful on the East Coast right now?
I love this team so much. Like, I'm going to be really upset if they don't make the World Series. Because like I watched them a ton during the summer. I'm definitely in the cult of all the quirkiness, the grimace stuff, the OMG stuff. Like, they're such a fun team. They're fun. They're fun to the point where I swear to God, this is true. Multiple Yankees fans, not only in my life, but also strangers on the street, have told me that they cast a jealous eye towards Met fandom because of how fun that this team is versus how corporate and straightforward the Yankees are. It's the most exhilarating thing that you could possibly hear.
Isn't it nice on the East Coast right now, Wish? I was just checking the weather before I head out to Philly, and I was like, wow, 25 degrees, let's go.
It's a little cold. Okay. At night. I mean, next week is going to be really nice, apparently.
Yeah.
But tonight and tomorrow are going to be a little bit colder, I think.
Good.
So it's a little blast of fall before we settle into in the 70s Fahrenheit wise next week, so you're coming at the right time.
I like the Mets, Wish. I don't know if we can handle another Subway Series between the Mets and the Yankees. That concerns me a little bit. And I think I'm pretty sure the Yankees are going to take care of Cleveland, so I don't know. I don't know if I'm up for that, but I'm not against the Mets.
We're going to talk hockey in a second, but let it be known that if they somehow get past the Dodgers, then there's two very distinct roads in front of us as Mets fans. The first is that this is a magical season in which we dispatch all of our rivals, the Braves to get in, the Phillies, the Dodgers, and then the Yankees, the final boss. Or we've all been waiting for what maximum pain for a Mets fan would be, and it would be to have this magical season where Grimace is throwing out the first pitch and now people are wearing Grimace suits to the game, and then the Yankees beat us in the second time in the World Series. Like, that would be the maximum pain. So there's no middle ground here. In a way, it would be the best thing if the Dodgers just eliminated them to make it so we don't have to feel that maximum amount of pain. But I mean, that's what we might be headed to, and I don't disagree. I don't think anyone in North America gives a toss about the Subway Series.
You guys do. I don't know about outside of New York, but I guess we'll find out the answer. Okay, so speaking of pain here, I've got the NHL.com standings page open here, sorted by points percentage. The worst teams in the league by points percentage. You've got Colorado and Nashville, haven't picked up a point yet. The Edmonton Oilers with a 250 points percentage.
Yeah, but they do this every year.
Then you've got the Sabres. Then you've got the Canucks. So four of the bottom five teams by points percentage were consensus, no doubt about it, you know, Western Conference playoff picks. Of those teams, we're going to do like the panic rankings index here. Of those teams, Colorado, Nashville, Edmonton, Vancouver, who should be panicking the most in the early going here?
I think Colorado, if only because I thought they just needed to play average hockey until the reinforcements arrived. And what they're doing right now is kind of inexplicable. Not in the sense of like the goaltending being below average, because I think the goaltending is below average. But, you know, hearing these like emo panic media scrums from Cale Makar, where he's saying the team would have been better without me on the ice, like, this is four games into the season, and I feel like they're already getting mentally wrecked. And then on top of that, I mean, the reinforcements they're counting on, like, Lekkonen's fine. I mean, he's, you know, when he's healthy, he's going to be back. But, like, even when Nikushkin comes back, for how long? Mm-hmm. Are we going to see Landeskog again? Like, there's the reinforcements have their own set of question marks surrounding it, too. So of those teams, like, look, the Oilers will get their act together. I think the same thing with Vancouver. I think Nashville is just going through the growing pains of importing, you know, three huge new pieces and then seeing how that fits. Like, they only have one goal on the power play so far, and that's not going to be the case when you have that much talent on with the man advantage. So of those teams, I think because of that, Colorado is the one I'm most concerned about.
What have you noticed from the Canucks as they've sort of, not, you know, it's not so much as a stumble out of the gate, Wish. It's like they've put one foot wrong out of the starting gate. What have you noticed?
I've noticed that we're going to be in a perpetual cycle of concern and adulation for Elias Pettersson.
Yeah.
It is the topic, as you guys probably know, the topic of conversation is constantly what he is or is not doing on this team. And that's an enormous amount of pressure to apply on one player. But I feel like, you know, he's the lightning rod at this point. I mean, you know, his statistics seasons in the regular season have been solid, but not like as solid as maybe people believe they can be. I mean, you know, once you hit 100 points, I think the expectation is that you hit 100 points every season. His lack of production in the postseason has certainly colored impressions of him overall as the top line player. And so as the team wobbles and doesn't necessarily get off to the best start, and, you know, maybe to distract people from the is Thatcher Demko okay, and when he comes back will he still be okay kind of conjecture, there's just been an inordinate amount of discussion of Elias Pettersson and his lack of production so far.
How do you view Pettersson right now, right? Because I think the conversation here, and we've been having it over the course of this week especially, is, you know, you look at his track record and he's been so productive and such a good player at such a young age that you're always, like, my perspective is always, okay, I'm going to bet on the talent of that player and we're going to see that version again. At the same time, you know, I think it's what, 30 plus goals, including the playoffs and going into last year, that he hasn't scored an even strength goal. And at a certain point, that concern does begin to set in. I don't know if I'm quite there yet, but it's just such a bizarre situation. Do you still view him and think, you know what, yes, this guy is going to be that elite two-way center that we've seen sometime in the near future?
Yeah, no, because he is that elite two-way center, right? I mean, that's what I'm trying to say, is that I think that there's just sort of like a short track from, you know, being like, is he okay, to being outright panic whenever he has these droughts. And, you know, when you start reading stories about him doing, you know, like extra practice and things like that, like there's just, it seems like there's just a disproportionate amount of concern about, you know, whether or not he can be something that people project him to be. And maybe that's not appreciating what he is. Now, granted, like, at some point you've got to start really producing, especially for a team that's not out of the gate in the most solid of ways. But my concerns about this team, let me put it this way. I'm a hell of a lot more concerned about Thatcher Demko and maybe him having to, like, play through something beyond this season than I am about whether or not Elias Pettersson is going to get his act together statistically.
With what you just said about Thatcher Demko, I want to put it in the context of Swayman Allmark. And then today, the big NHL news is the Jake Oettinger extension. Now, I don't think it's controversial at all to say that when healthy, Thatcher Demko is the equal or better than some of those goaltenders. However, a year and a half out, or two seasons, I suppose, until the expiry of his current five-year, $5 million deal, I guess it was a four-year, $5 million deal. How cautious should a team like the Canucks be in considering an extension, given the track record here, the lack of durability that's been on display, and obviously the deeply concerning injury that he's still working his way back from?
But you nailed it. Like, everybody who's gotten a big contract for the most part in the last, like, year, calendar year, have been workhorses. It started with Hellebuck, you know, signing that deal to remain with the Jets. Then UC Saros gets a new deal. Swayman and Allmark, I mean, we can argue, okay, do we really know how durable they are when they're in a tandem? But I mean, Allmark has at least shown their propensity to play a ton of games. Oettinger has had a few little injury situations in the last couple of years, but for the most part, he's a workhorse. Like, the coin of the realm right now in the NHL isn't simply just, like, are you a great goaltender? It's also, apparently, can you be someone that we can rely on to be healthy? And so that brings us back to Demko. And yeah, I do think it's a legitimate question of, you know, if you're going to throw, you know, even more money after him on a new deal, how much can you depend on him being in the lineup? Because clearly when he's not, this is a much different team insofar as their prospects of winning a Stanley Cup.
How it's interesting, though, because the definition of workhorse goalie keeps changing, right? So we are seeing these guys who, you know, teams think can be that workhorse cash in, but we're also going
to
see...
It's very baseball, Jamie. To bring it back to baseball, we're going to have a starter soon, right? Like the bullpen
games. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, it used to be like, hey, can you throw 300 innings in a year? And now it's like, can you get to... It's incredible if you get to 200, right? Mm-hmm. But so, I mean... The NHL as a whole is going to have to figure out what to do with goalies maybe like Thatcher Demko, who are really good, but you can't rely on to play that traditional starter workhorse role year in, year out.
Yeah, but that changes in the playoffs, though. That's the difference between baseball and hockey with the goaltending and the pitchers is that, you know, if you're a guy on a pitch count in Major League Baseball, they're not all of a sudden expecting you to go from, like, 100 to 130. When it's the playoffs, you're still extremely restricted in what they want out of your arm. Like when you're an NHL goalie, when we talk about being a workhorse, it's not only simply playing, you know, 55 to 60 games in the regular season, or maybe 50 to 55 if we want to trend it down to those tandem levels. It's also playing every night in the playoffs. Like no, there's not a whole, outside of a few exceptions, there's not a whole hell of a lot of tandem work in the playoffs. So that's kind of the equation too, is like, can we depend on you to be healthy and available and not have an injury within the context of a playoff round all of a sudden change the dynamics of our entire postseason journey.
Does the recent goalie signings right now, Swayman and Ottinger getting that deal, I mean, what impact does that have on the Igor Shesterkin situation with the Rangers, if any? Where's that one going in your view?
Well, I think it probably gives Chris Drury, the GM of the Rangers, a little bit of proof of concept in the sense of, like, he could point to all these deals and say, okay, this is what all of these guys are getting, and so that is the context for what we're offering you. And then Igor Shesterkin can come back and say, yeah, but I'm better than all of them. Like, outside of Hellebuck, I think he probably wins that argument, and he can say, and also you don't have another option besides me if you want to re-sign me. So I think, listen, I'm team Shesterkin on this one. Like, I think he's a really special goaltender, and I think given within the context of the Rangers and what they don't have behind him, and what they do have behind him is, like, 105-year-old Jonathan Quick. Like, you know, you've got to sign this guy. Like, he's the whole ballgame for you. And again, like, the money he's asking for that's been leaked and reported has gotten some blowback insofar as, like, how can this guy think he's worth that amount of money? One, doesn't matter what we think. Like, if he thinks he can get it, somebody will give it to him. And two, with the cap going up, every contract that's in that ballpark is going to be recontextualized, as I think Bobrovsky's contract has even been recontextualized. I think the winning has certainly helped, but I think also
I don't know if it should have been, Wish.
If it should have been recontextualized?
Yeah, I mean, that deal has not worked. It just, the team has worked around it, you know?
But hold on. Two trips to the Stanley Cup Final, one Stanley Cup Championship. You had to pay that money to get him as a free agent, in theory.
What happened, like, to the GM who signed the deal?
Oh, he's no longer there. But the GM that inherited the deal didn't exactly kick him out the door, did he?
Well, I don't know if it was for a lack of trying, Wish.
I mean, it is for lack of trying, but it didn't happen. Like, he clearly was still there. I mean, yeah, I mean, you can make the point that
might,
like,
be a testament to how bad the contract was. I mean, they restructured an entire goalie department. You know what I mean? Like, the whole raison d'etre of that Luongo Allaire department is to make sure you're not the team that does it again. Right? Like,
right, and develop a pipeline behind him. Absolutely. But that's also a function of him being the age that he is. Look, I mean, listen, if you went around the league and said, hey, you have to pay your goalie that contract, but you're going to get two trips
to the
final and a championship out of it. And also, like, it's not as if he was a passenger for those runs either. Like, he was, come on, really?
Yeah, dude. What are you talking about?
He was bad?
He wasn't bad. No, of course
not. Are you making this out to be like Sergei Bobrovsky, goalie Bob, the guy who gets credited by everybody on that team for being the foundation for these runs, is like Darcy Kemper on the Avalanche?
No, more like Chris Osgood.
Okay.
He's fine.
I guess that makes Aaron Ekblad Nick Lidstrom then.
Wish. He was a 906 goalie in the second run. He was a 915 goalie in the other run. Like, we're not seeing a guy picking his teeth here. We're seeing a guy be steady. You know?
906 blows away league average, by the way.
I was going to say, in this day and age now.
By 0.03. Like, league average 903. Come on.
No, league average is 900.
Now, maybe. Not last season, 903. So, my point being, these weren't, like, I'm. How much credit do you get for stoning the Hurricanes in the playoffs, man? At some point, you know, we got to be chill about this.
So you can only get credit for having the good fortune of playing high octane offensive teams and shutting them down in the playoffs.
Well,
winning playoff series doesn't matter.
No,
anymore.
It's just like the goal prevention that the Panthers pulled off. Like, what's more important to it? Barkov and Forsling being sicked on top competition all the time, or Sergei Bobrovsky? Like, come on. I mean, what are we crediting?
I'm not saying he's the reason they won. I'm saying he's a primary reason they won. And if you can show me the last time a goaltender carried his team to a championship in this league, you know, so maybe you can, like, can you even say Vasilevsky did that at the height of his powers, or is it the team in front of him? Is it Victor Hedman playing 30 minutes a night?
I mean, I would absolutely say that Vasilevsky was a larger part of what the Lightning did, especially from a goal prevention standpoint, than Bobrovsky was for the Panthers.
Oh, I completely agree.
For sure, but he didn't carry the Lightning to the Stanley Cup, though, I think is what we're saying.
But he essentially did the same thing that Bob does.
But on their three runs...
He doesn't cost you series. For me, it's a very simple baseline.
Didn't cost you series. Wish, these guys are in totally different universes. Like, look. Their three consecutive runs to the Cup Final. 926, 936, 922 for Vasilevsky. Like, Vasilevsky was dominant. Dominant. Bobrovsky was good enough. There's a massive difference. And it's evident if you watch it, man. Come on.
I appreciate you winning a sports talk radio argument that I'm not trying to make, which is that Bobrovsky and Vasilevsky are on the same level. It's not anything I just said, but I'm trying to tell you that my bar for...
Wish, I'm going to kill that straw man dead.
My bar for postseason achievement is whether or not you can win me a series and not lose me a series.
Sure.
And Bobrovsky, I think the proof's in the pudding as far as him being adept at that. And we've seen how many teams have their playoff runs short-circuited by guys that maybe put together incredible regular seasons, but when it comes to the postseason, I mean, it's to throw back to a very old reference, it's getting a Bakhov syndrome of, like, you put up incredible numbers in the regular season, but then that one time that you screw up in a playoff series is the goal that costs your team the series. And Bob, to his credit, is you know, the guy who instead built you a foundation on which you can win a series.
Love to pay $10 million for a goaltender to give me an above average season two of his five seasons. Love that.
$10 million for a Stanley Cup and a conference champion, two conference championships I'd take every day.
Well, I'm glad we got that sorted out.
I was going to ask though.
Oh, this is all leading to a question?
No, I mean, I obviously got waylaid because you know how I feel about this.
Yes.
So it's a running bit on our show that, like, the national media loves to credit Bobrovsky and I lose my mind. Wish, it's been a running bit on this show for a while. So you unintentionally stepped into a personal hornet's nest.
You guys in the media,
yeah, you guys in the national media with your Bobrovsky takes. We do a very niche show out here. I wanted to sort of bring this just generally back to Demko, right? And because you've expressed, I think, completely well-founded skepticism. I think we've talked about it a lot in this market, but just the uncertainty, the unprecedented nature of the injury and the fact that he's without a timeline. When you think about where Vancouver sits in sort of the Western Conference hierarchy, and you were on them before last season, to your credit.
Yeah.
How much does the Demko uncertainty impact what you view as this team's sort of range of outcomes this year?
Oh, I think it impacts it greatly. I mean, I think they go from being, a team that if things broke the right way and if they continued to kind of progress under Tocchet, that could play for the Stanley Cup, to one that I have no faith could play for the Stanley Cup. I think Demko elevates them to a real contender status. Second for the Vezina last year. I mean, he's a fantastic goaltender. And to me, like, when you think about the advantages and disadvantages teams in the West have, You look at a team like Dallas. Dallas is stacked with depth and has Ottinger. You know, the Oilers have Connor and Leon, who can win a series on their own. I think the Canucks have a lot going for them, but to me, like, the thing that puts them over the top is, I mean, I was going to say a healthy Thatcher Demko. I don't know if we can ever go there, but like an effective Thatcher Demko, and a Thatcher Demko that's playing at least somewhere close to the abilities that he has.
Wish, I wasn't expecting quite so much Sergei Bobrovsky talk on the when we had you on here, but I'm very glad that you came on and you made some time for us. Thank you for doing so.
Love you, Wish. Gotcha. Good luck. Go Mets.
I should have known better than to light the fuse with Grant on the podcast about anything Panthers related.
Yeah.
Who I was talking to.
All right. Thanks, Wish. We appreciate it.
Take care.
Good luck tonight, buddy.
That is ESPN's Greg Wyshynski joining the show, weighing in on some of the teams struggling and the goaltending landscape around the NHL.
And randomly getting yelled at about his Sergei Bobrovsky was essential
almost
to their wins.
We should
send him a gift basket.
We should tell no. Like producer Lena should have like a standard form she sends to guests that are like, don't bring these topics up
unless don't say anything unless, can happen.
Unless you want Drance to get angry at you, don't mention Sergei Bobrovsky.
No, I mean,
red flags to stay away from with Drance.
You can like, it's like remember how the Stars, right, all of a sudden got like really good middle six production out of Sagan and Ben over the last couple of years. And like in combination with Wyatt Johnston and what we've seen from Jason Robertson and just their run of excellent drafting, it like helped, right? Like these guys were good bit players on the team. But to credit Bobrovsky for me, in my mind, as being like a primary driver of the Panthers Cup success is to sort of make the error that like he's a driver of it as opposed to a piece that can contribute, but is massively inefficient, right? It's like they've made it work around him. Much like the Stars have with Sagan and Ben, even though those contracts have aged poorly, right? Like, and that's important. Like, that's part of what good management is you sort of take what you can get and you squeeze as much value from what you have that's not necessarily, like, pinpoint efficient as possible. Like, that's a credit to Jim Nill and the Stars drafting. It's a credit to Bill Zito and how they've built that team in front of Bobrovsky. I just fundamentally can't stomach the argument that he's been like the Conn Smythe, that Bobrovsky should win the Conn Smythe over Barkov, Forsling, McDavid stuff was
that
insane.
That was a little much.
Was insane.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. We'll do more Panthers talk. Hopefully we'll shelf the Bobrovsky talk, though. On the other side.
Yeah, with Plagans, for sure.
Yeah, with Plagans.
We'll mostly talk pronunciations.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get into just
Bobrovsky,
the origins of his name. Radio play-by-play voice of the Florida Panthers, Doug Plagans, joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here on a Canucks game day. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Of course, the Canucks in Florida taking on the Panthers this afternoon. And now joining us, he is the radio play-by-play voice of the Florida Panthers. He is Doug Plagans. Doug, thanks very much for joining us today. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And of course, the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. And, you know, I know they're coming off a couple of wins in a row here. You know, they're dealing with Tkachuk and Barkov out of the lineup. But any signs of Stanley Cup hangover so far from what you can see for the Panthers?
Not at all. And this team came into training camp with an incredibly business-like approach. And it's a team that's accomplished a lot of success, and I think a group that knows that it's got a long runway ahead of them in terms of what they can still accomplish here. So they came in hungry. They came in, like I said, with a business-like approach, and they know that they're still going to be in the mix for this thing for a long time to come. And you know, it's more of a carryover. I think everybody came in with an excitement. You know, everybody came in with a confidence. And you mentioned some of the big guns being out. Barkov's missed a few games here. Matthew Tkachuk's been out for a few games. But you're seeing the players stepping up, like an Anton Lundell. He and Etu Luostarinen on that line with Sam Reinhart, who obviously had the monster season last year. Those guys have been together as a line in the past. They've been kind of reunited here over these last few and picked up right where they, you know, where they've left off when they've been together in the past. But it's been a full team effort here early on, and it really is a group that has, for the lack of a better way to put it, picked up right where it left off in terms of the mindset, the approach from last spring.
Doug, with what happened against Columbus the other night, I mean, how they've been able to withstand the Barkov injury, how they've been able to withstand the loss of various star-level defenders over the past few years. What is it about Paul Maurice's system here and how the Panthers play that lets them just sort of keep coming regardless of what's subtracted from the lineup?
Well, I think there's a ton of credit that goes to Paul Maurice and his system and the way these guys play, but also a ton of credit that should go to general manager Bill Zito and his hockey operations department for finding the right character type of guys and the right fits to come in and play this kind of system. And it's a system that's been able to bring the best out of a lot of different guys. It's been able to help guys take their careers to new heights, guys that have come in here and maybe gotten a little bit more responsibility here than they had in other places. It's been a place where guys have been able to come and kind of revitalize and rejuvenate their careers as well over these last couple of years. But I think, you know, going off your question, it was something I wanted to get to as well, is the fact that I think across the hockey world over the course of the offseason, I think, and it's no slight on the guys who've moved on elsewhere, because I think that when you have sustained success, especially when you win a Stanley Cup, especially in a salary cap league, guys are going to get bigger paydays elsewhere. Guys are going to get other opportunities elsewhere. That's just kind of the nature of the business. Guys are going to be, you know, moving on. But I think way too much has been made over the guys that moved on, and not enough has been made of the fact that coming into this year, the Panthers returned their 8 leading scorers. They returned 8 of their top 9 forwards, and one of the guys getting the first crack to kind of take that Vladimir Tarasenko spot from last spring is a draft pick who's in-house. They returned 3 of their top 4 defensemen. Sergei Bobrovsky's still going to have the lion's share of starts in net. Paul Maurice is still the head coach. I think for a team that is coming off as much success as this team's had the last couple of years and that's coming off a championship, I think there's really a great amount of continuity, more continuity than you usually see. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to Bill Zito. I think you lose guys like Brandon Montour, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, players like that, but to be able to plug the holes with a lot of proven guys and guys who've been in-house, you know, I think that great work's been done by, like I said, the hockey operations department, and I think there is a great deal of continuity, and I think that may have gotten lost in the shuffle a little bit. Too much talk about who's left and maybe not enough talk about how much continuity is here.
Canucks beat the Panthers twice last year. Is there anything you see in this matchup that could carry over? Like, is there a reason why Vancouver seemed to be a tougher matchup for what was clearly the class of the NHL and the Florida Panthers last season, Doug, or is it just two games, whatever?
It's interesting. It's tough sometimes to fully, it's tough to fully pinpoint, you know, all the factors when it comes to teams that don't play each other all that much. And I believe if we look back at the calendar, I think both of those matchups, much like this season, both of the matchups the Panthers and Canucks had last year were before the turn of the new year, before Christmas. So they were relatively early. You know, it's tough to pinpoint too much of, you know, it's tough to put too much on games like that from early last year, and much the same again this year. They're playing each other now. I think the other half of the season series in Vancouver is in December. So, you know, it won't be too long before the Panthers and the Canucks see each other again. Always interesting, always fun, always good to see how these teams match up against each other. And I think there's a lot of speed. There's physicality on both sides of the ice. And, hey, it is always fun to see the Eastern and the Western Conference teams that don't see each other all that much hit the ice against one another. Something different for all of us. But, yeah, those were, in some ways, anomalies last year. But Vancouver had a really good team, so I can't call it too much of an anomaly. It was just the way things shook out, but I wouldn't put too much into it.
Doug, you mentioned the continuity and some of the depth that's so important for the Panthers, and especially with Barkov and Tkachuk out of the lineup temporarily here. And, the name that jumps to mind for me that I think for a lot of fans outside of Florida probably flies a little bit under the radar with all the talent there is Anton Lundell, right? And still a very young player, 35, 33 points the last couple of years, but then he was really productive in the playoffs. And I know now getting a chance to play up on that top line in Barkov's absence, how important as they do, as you said, right? A successful team, you're always going to lose key players. Guys are going to go elsewhere in a salary cap world. How important is Anton Lundell and his development, his role to keeping the Panthers competitive here?
Hugely important, and he's been a guy we've talked so much about over the course of really the entire 2024 calendar year, and all for great reasons. He's, first of all, as you said, flies under the radar a little bit, I think, if we were talking across North America, but easy to forget how young this guy still is. He was the first-round pick that Bill Zito made as the general manager. And he just turned 23 at the beginning of this month. So he just turned 23 years old, meaning that when the Panthers won the Cup back on June 24th, he was still 22. He's got 54 career playoff games under his belt already and is barely 23 years old. So he's piling up experience and experience playing big games on the biggest stage against the best teams. He came in with a really high hockey IQ, mature beyond his years as it was, and we're seeing the offensive instincts continue to grow. He's an incredibly responsible defensive player, and being able to observe Barkov and observe Sam Reinhart and guys like this on a day-to-day basis, I know has only been able to help. He and Reinhart and Etu Luostarinen have had a great deal of chemistry, when they've been together over time. But he plays a lot on the penalty kill. You can expect he and Etu Luostarinen to be one of the go-to penalty kill pairings up front for Paul Maurice. But Paul Maurice said just today, he views him as a veteran player, even though this is a guy that just turned 23 years old because of how much his game's progressed. And truly, I know, speaking for everybody here, the sky is truly the limit on what Anton Lundell is going to be able to accomplish. And part of that is the fact that he was a first-round pick that walked into already a team, a team that was ready to compete his rookie year. He was playing big games. He was playing big responsibilities right out of the gate. And you've seen him be able to use all that experience to his advantage. And, again, easy to forget how young he still is because of how many big games he's already played in. But just 23, got the 6-year contract extension over the offseason, and I know we're excited to have him in the fold here for a lot of years to come.
Doug, always great to have a chance to catch up with you, bud. But one last one before we let you go. Jonah Gadjevich, ex-Canuck, a regular for the Florida Panthers on the fourth line. What's he brought? What should we expect to see from a familiar face tonight?
Well, as you guys know, outstanding guy off the ice, tough as nails on the ice, and just works hard. And Paul Maurice has talked about this before. He, albeit in the Ontario Hockey League, he once had a 46 goal season at the major junior level. And quite honestly, you don't do that by accident. You've got to have pretty good scoring touch and instincts around the net to be able to do that. And the thing with Jonah Gadjevich, they love him on that fourth line. And he plays a great physical role, but also has drawn a lot of praise for just being a really fundamentally sound player. He fits the system. He knows where to go. He's positionally sound. He comes into this one leading the Panthers in hits, which should be no surprise the way that he goes about his business out there. But he's the ultimate teammate off the ice, always a smile on his face. He's already found the back of the net here early in the season. So, again, seeing him as a regular, he's a guy that's been a huge part of this team and a huge part of the culture here. And it's just been great to see him continue to be entrenched in his role. But just a great guy and somebody, again, who's come in and played a really good fundamental forechecking style that fits this team perfectly.
Doug, really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. And we'll let you get back to your day. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks so much, guys.
That is Doug Plagans, radio play-by-play voice for the Florida Panthers, giving us a preview of what to expect from Florida without Barkov, without Tkachuk. But as he said, very impressive young career that Anton Lundell is building, and he moves up to play on the top line in Barkov's absence for the Florida Panthers. It is Canucks talk here, Sportsnet 650. Again, the game tonight against Florida, 4 o'clock start time, so Canucks Central will come in after us. They'll have the pregame show starting at 3. And then, of course, Batch and Randeep on the call and Satin Bick on your postgame coverage here on Sportsnet 650. We've been talking about goaltending a fair amount today. Of course, as you said, Jake Oettinger signs the big extension in Dallas. He gets the Jeremy Swayman contract that we saw Swayman get from the Bruins not that long ago. Some talk about, you know, future contractual status of Thatcher Demko and everything, but this question comes in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line from Austin and Langley. Has there been a Demko health update? It feels like the fan base has been too busy trying to run their star center out of town that they forgot about our Vezina caliber goalie that is on IR. And I do think it's a fair point from Austin and Langley that is the absence of Thatcher Demko kind of an under-discussed early season subplot here for the Vancouver Canucks, right?
Is it under-discussed?
Has it been, though?
I mean, I feel like we at least mention it every show.
Do we?
Yeah.
Every show?
I just don't think we dwell on it. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. But I mean, just to bring it back to like the snowballing point you made about the first game, yeah, right?
Well, lacking a key engine.
If Thatcher Demko's in net, you're winning that game.
100%.
And it's probably not even close. You're probably not even sweating it out, right? Even if they don't bring a much better effort in front of Thatcher Demko in the final couple of periods. Yeah. And then how different does the season look, right? Just by virtue of having Thatcher Demko in that game.
Well, and if Thatcher Demko, like the thing about Demko, right, is he has these just incredible runs,
mm-hmm,
right? Like there's just months on end where he's completely unbeatable, right? I mean, he will be the best goaltender in the world for 5-week stretches, 6-week stretches. I mean, it's preposterous. And when that happens at the start of the season, as it did last year, I mean, it's enormously valuable. It's valuable even when it happens after
the season. Anytime.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, it happened the first season where he sort of took over the starter's mantle from Braden Holtby, right? Like it happened in March. And that March 2021 run that Demko had was every bit as good. It was just like way too little, way too late.
Mm.
And then the whole team got COVID. And then, you know, the Bruce There It Is run, like he was such a key part of that. But again, too little, too late, right? When it happens at the start of the season, or if it could ever happen in May and June, right? I mean, that's where this team could cook with oil. You know, I don't know. I mean, look, at some point the Demko thing, we just kind of have to wait and see, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing.
I mean, I just find it enormously frustrating to keep talking about Jamie, to be totally honest with you, in part because we don't know. We don't have a ton of information. I'm rooting for him to just like get back because he's such a competitive guy and such a talented athlete that you just want to see him get a shot, especially now that, you know, this team should have the talent level where if he can get hot at the right time, like it could actually matter. And he didn't get that shot last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like this team didn't get a shot to go on a playoff run with their ace in the hole. And that just like that's just gutting. Like you never want to see that happen to a guy, you know, as prickly as he can be to deal with. Right. Like just a hardworking, super talented athlete who's really thoughtful about his approach to the position, you know, regardless of how insightful he is in talking to the media, with the exception, of course, of what he did at training camp this year. But you know, also, I mean, we talked about this throughout last season, right? Like why did he play so much? He'd never played 60 games and been healthy at the end of the year,
mm-hmm,
or like poised to, you know, go on the sort of run that the club needed him to go on. Obviously then he ends up getting hurt and it might've just been a fluke thing, might not have been due to overuse, but club played with fire in first place last year. And then in the lead up to this season, I mean, what was one of my constant talking points about one thing I thought the Canucks should do? It was go get a real third goaltender, like spend money on it, because I thought you needed it given, you know, my sort of uncertainty about Shelovs and the fact that Demko's status was somewhat unknown in the wake of that injury. And, you know, Lankanen should stabilize things. He obviously had a solid Canucks debut, but I mean, at what point, what else is there to say? Like, we don't know his timeline. We don't know when he'll be back. The impact is massive. Of course it's massive. Losing Demko for a six-week stretch is every bit as damaging to this team as losing Hughes or Pettersson, right? Or Miller. Like, he's that... those are the four guys.
Are the four stars.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to argue with me and say Hughes is in fact the most important of the four, like, I'm not going to argue with you. But after Hughes, it's probably Thatcher.
Yeah, but I see, that's where the conversation becomes interesting to me, because I agree with you, right? On the one hand, from the injury side of things, there's just so much we don't know, right? We don't know the timeline. We don't know what his recovery process is going to look like, how they're going to have to manage him when he comes back, you know, how it's going to affect his performance. All of those things are unknown. But, and this was something I talked about, you know, a reason why I was relatively unconcerned with his absence and confident about the team was, I thought what we saw last year from the Canucks in terms of the defense in front of Demko should have lessened the importance of Thatcher Demko, right? Should have turned them into a team that needed Thatcher Demko to win, to a team that needed him to be a contender, no doubt, but could at least win consistently and be a good regular season team without that level of performance from Thatcher Demko. So I think in Demko's absence, it's the question and the conversation for me is that true or not, right? And are we going to see evidence that that is or is not true? We're still a long way from that. We're three games in, right? But I think that is where it becomes interesting is, had they taken, did the steps they take last year, were they as big as we thought they were when it comes to not needing to rely constantly on excellent Thatcher Demko performances to win, right? That's where the conversation gets interesting for me.
Well, and I think my view of it anyway is, like, we kind of saw it in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, we kind of saw in the playoffs that this team was going to be able to at least keep things close, right? Like, at least be in the mix with really good teams with or without their star netminder. The problem is, you know, this team's not the same, right? Like, I think they should be good enough to win with Lankinen and Shelovs, personally. But I also don't know that they're as imposing defensively as the team we saw in the postseason last year. I mean, I think the Lindholm absence, certainly the departures of Cole and Zadorov, and the performances that they've gotten so far from those depth defensemen, and by the way, not just the depth defensemen, like, I don't think Carson Soucy's been at the level that he was last season so far. Stuff like that. And which isn't to criticize Carson Soucy. I'm confident that he's a really good shutdown defenseman. It's just that it hasn't been a hot start for him. And so we don't know, but also we might never know, because I don't think this is the same team. I don't think they're trying to play the same way. I think they're trying to evolve as a group. And, you know, as you implement new systems and sort of find your footing with some of the new players involved and some of the new systems involved and some of the new priorities involved, I mean, inevitably, you probably need to lean a little more heavily on your
goaltenders. Well, that's the thing, right? You would love to have the luxury of Thatcher Demko while you're trying to work these things out, right?
Right.
While you're trying to build the new system, get the newcomers acclimated and figure out where they sort best, right? Like, or where they fit best. He's kind of the ultimate safety net to have in that situation. I do think that's part of what we're seeing. You're right. Like, it's not the team that was operating with incredible defensive confidence going into the playoffs last year that Shelovs and Lankinen are playing behind. It's a team that's going through some growing pains, and you're right, like, Thatcher Demko would make a world of difference, I think, just giving them that breathing room to kind of work through things knowing they have Demko back there.
Yeah, and we get a text in from Mac Envy, who says, Drance constantly talks about how goaltending is not that important, but now Demko is the most important player on the team. The thing that I often talk about with goaltending is, you don't know and neither do I, right? Like, that's the main thing that I do when I talk about goaltenders. And what I mean by that is, goaltending performance is so volatile and fluctuates so wildly and unpredictably that you can go into a playoff series and be like, they have Stuart Skinner and we have Thatcher Demko. That's or what happened the round after the Canucks faced the Oilers. We have Stuart Skinner and they have Jake Oettinger. They have an edge in net. And then the series plays out and it's like, oh, Jake Oettinger was struggling here. Maybe not. Likewise, game to game, right? You can think that you have a goaltending edge on paper, but then the way the game plays out, there's so many different factors that go into goaltending performance that it's pretty tough to rely on game to game, series to series. There are, however, three or four goalies on the planet who do genuinely matter, who consistently perform at an exceptional level. Is Demko one of them? I think he's close, right? I think he's close. The problem that I think Demko bumps into, if we sort of look at his last 4 years, right? 915, 915, 901, 918. Well, that 901 was kind of submarined because he, you know, as Bruce Boudreau would later reveal, was kind of coming off an injury, maybe hadn't trained the right way all summer, and then got hurt pretty early in that season, and then came back and played excellent hockey on the second half. Demko's played 219 games for his career, 6,768 shots, 912 save percentage. It's above average, consistently above average. It's not Hellebuck, Vasilevsky, Shesterkin, although Shesterkin and Vasilevsky both struggled last year, so that sort of takes the shine off that rose too. But, you know, he's at least in the mix if durability had sort of been something he could have leaned on more heavily. He's in the mix to be among those goalies who matter. Right?
Yeah.
Among those goalies who year after year reliably you can trust to be like well above average, maybe even elite. And there's just very few of those guys. And for the rest of it, the rest of the goaltenders, it doesn't matter. Now, you lose Demko, right? You lose Demko. Why does it matter for this team? Well, all of a sudden you're not in with a bid to have one of the guys that matters, right? And the baseline expectation that we should have of a Shelovs Lankinen tandem has like a ceiling that's probably equal, to be totally honest with you, because as we've seen over the years, like Jim Carrey had 10 shutouts that one season and
yeah.
on and on. Like we see, remember Spencer Martin's 13 games of 950 goaltending, right? Like we see ham and egg goaltenders get run extraordinarily hot for years on end, playoff runs on end, right? Certainly seasons on end. That's still there, but the floor falls out. And as we saw with like the Delia Martin year, right? Like when you don't have the baseline Demko type, your range of outcomes is wider. And I think we've kind of seen a floor outcome for the Canucks goaltenders through three games. Not that Lankinen was solid in his game against the Philadelphia Flyers, but Shelovs has had two rough outings, I'd say. He actually had some excellent moments against Tampa Bay.
I wouldn't go as far to call it a rough outing. I think, if you'd want to say it wasn't a strong outing, I think that's fair. I would say it's like maybe average because he did some really good things as well. As much as I didn't like the Braden Point goal,
yeah, he did in the first period especially. But you know, at the end of the day, if I were to have told you before the season that the Canucks would be winless after three games and Shelovs would have an .827 save percentage, having allowed 9 goals in his first 2 starts, you'd be like, oof.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's tough. I bet they haven't won a game yet, right? So my point being, we've got a floor outcome from Shelovs' 2 starts, and it's a low floor, right? Like, that's kind of how it works when you don't have that reliable starter. So it's not that goaltending doesn't matter. It's that we are overconfident when we talk about what it looks like on paper, right? We are overconfident in the ability of the name brand guy to perform or outperform the guy who's got a lower track record. Shelovs could absolutely bounce back from this and have like a month of .930 goaltending and lead the Canucks on an excellent run. Like that's still absolutely in the cards. And in fact, to write it off because he's had 2 rough games, I think would be a mistake. It's just that we don't have any sense of the floor that this club has in net. Demko gives you floor and ceiling, both with like a higher degree of confidence than you'll get from just about any goaltender on the planet, save for a select group.
Yeah, handful of true elite guys at the very top of the pyramid,
which I'm not even excluding Demko from necessarily. Like, I think he might absolutely be in that group. We just need to sort of see it a little bit more consistently and with a little bit more durability, which we just haven't had an opportunity to do in his career to this point.
And Cam at the farm texts in, when I watch the games and Demko starts, it feels like the Canucks will probably win. When someone else is in net, it feels like the Canucks have a chance to win. That's a big vibes discrepancy from a fan perspective. I can only imagine the difference for the players on the team. I think that's a kind of a good way of summing it up, right? Like, even though you know the other goalies are capable of playing really well, of winning you games, or at least certainly not costing you games, there's just that aura, right? There's that aura that Thatcher Demko has that you think the goaltending has a chance to be really special, has a chance to be at that next level, and certainly something the Canucks could use right now early in the season. Keep your text coming in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can send us your questions about the Canucks so far, about this game against the Florida Panthers. We got an open segment to wrap things up next, so send those texts in again, 650-650. Final segment of Canucks Talk coming up here on Sportsnet 650. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. The Roar is back at BC Place for the BC Lions 70th season. Get your tickets now at BCLions.com. Calm. Of course, Canucks game coming up at 4 o'clock. Satin Reach already in the bullpen here at Sportsnet 650 Studios. Hard at work getting Canucks Central prepped for you. They'll have the pregame show at 3 as well. And of course, Bick and Randeep, or no, not Bick, Batch and Randeep on the call. Satin Bick on the postgame show after the game. So lots of good texts coming in here, 650, 650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we can get in to some of them. I did just want to touch a little bit on the game tonight specifically and maybe some lineup questions for the Canucks as well. And, you know, you brought it up with Doug Plagan's Drancer, right? The Canucks get a couple of wins against the Florida Panthers. Now, granted, early in the season, so not always the best litmus test of how teams ultimately look against each other, but they beat the Panthers a couple of times last year. From your perspective, is this a good stylistic matchup for the Canucks? Is there something about the way the Panthers play and the way Tocchet wants the Canucks to play that makes it at least a little bit more advantageous for them than it does for some other teams, given how good the Panthers are consistently these days?
Sorry,
the matchup, as you brought up with Doug.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's something to that matchup or if it's just a two-game sample, but, you know, the Canucks won a narrow one in Florida and smoked them in Vancouver.
And the thing I always remember from that Florida game is it was Kuzmenko, either with the winner or the tying goal. I think it was the winner.
He had the winner, but he had the sick setup, too, on the game tying goal.
Yes.
So he had this, like, unbelievable, like, he was rotating one way and then slid the puck against the grain, and it was just, like, an absolute sitter for Pettersson to smash home. Honestly, one of the coolest passes I saw in person last year.
Yeah.
Genuinely. But the thing that I remember from that Florida game was Quinn Hughes took it over. Like, that was one of Quinn Hughes' signature moments early in the year that really stand out to me. And then, he beat Oliver Ekman-Larsson down ice and scored on a sort of, like, broken play forecheck that kind of broke the game open. So, yeah.
That's the thing, though, right, is like, hey, they beat the Florida Panthers. It's like, with Andre Kuzmenko playing a big role in the comeback and ultimately winning the game. So it's like,
wrong. That's
good, but it's hard to judge too much on what that actually means about these two teams.
Yeah, you're definitely not wrong. I want to have a big picture conversation. Actually,
let's
Jamie.
Do it.
I want to have a big picture conversation about tactics versus strategy. Okay? The idea that tactics will take you so far, strategy matters too. Strategy being sort of the big picture side of the equation, right? And sort of when we've talked about this team over the life of this show, right? I've tended to focus my analysis on big picture stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? The, you know, need to rebuild, for example, during that stretch run in 2022-23, where, you know, I really thought this team was too far away to keep making short-term moves, that, like, amassing draft capital, amassing tradable assets, you know, looking ahead, trying to build around Pettersson and Hughes was kind of the strategy that needed to be followed if this team was going to build a contender. And that turned out to be incorrect, at least half incorrect, right? In that this team got way closer to being a meaningful contender last season, especially with all of the in-season moves that they were able to make, than I'd possibly imagined, right? But I still think the team entered the playoffs outside, like, the top seven teams in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I still sort of saw them as, you know, like a fringe top 10 team as opposed to a contending team, although their performance and the guts that they showed pulling out a ton of, you know, laugher games, incredible clutch performances from Besser, Miller, Hughes, obviously Shiloh.
Pugh Suter, big goal.
Pugh Suter, baby. Let's go.
Series clinching goal.
Totally.
Yeah.
And what I think sort of interesting about that is it feels like while I strongly disagreed with the strategy that this organization followed, big picture, right? Tactically, they made it all work. Like, their tactics were brilliant in terms of you know, the way that they were able to like take $11 million from the OEL buyout and then, you know, scatter that around on big defensemen and gritty, hardworking forwards that could play center, that could help on the penalty kill, and, you know, the way that they were able to.
Well, I've got a big one. They nailed the coaching hire.
They nailed the
huge
coaching hire.
Like, if you were going to follow that path, you had to nail the coaching hire, and they did. They hit
did.
It out of the park.
Clearly. And, you know, so it's like this Rutherford-Alvin front office has executed with exemplary tactics, right? A bunch of, like, singles. Now they also hit at least a double with Hronek, right? Which is key to this point. His first year was a smash success.
Yep.
I thought it made sense to extend him the way that they did. And, you know, they need him to be at that level again over the course of the season. I don't know that he has been yet, but I'm not worried about it after just three games. I think we should be confident that, at the very least, in combination with Quinn Hughes, Hronek can have a lead impact, right? He can have a lead impact. He's at least going to have very good impact, which is, you know, so anyway. Point being, it feels like they've sort of tactics their way through to a certain level. Now, we enter this season, I think, far more open-minded about this club's ability to contend, certainly than I was last season. But I still have concerns about whether they're an inner circle contender. We were talking about that in the lead-up to the season, right? Like, I was concerned about the goaltending, obviously, but also I was just concerned about regression generally, the way that everything hit all at once. Every guy had a career year. Every guy shot 20%. Like, it was wild the extent to which this team ran pure, as I've been calling it. And, you know, I am curious as we sort of get to this point, like, are there limits to how far tactics can take this team, right? I don't have an answer for this. I'm not coming down one way or the other, but it's just a dynamic or a tension that I'm aware of, that I'm tracking closely here, because the fundamental reason that I thought this team needed to take a step back was that I didn't think they were, you know, some smart depth adds around the edges away from contending. I thought they were big honking pieces away, like multiple top pair caliber defensemen. Maybe they landed one in Hronek, right? Especially because of the way that he's found chemistry with Hughes. That chemistry has been so incredible at elevating both players that I think they've, you know, really hit on something there, personally. I think everyone does. But I still think you're a top pair caliber defenseman short, right? And I do think we've seen a little bit of it. I thought they were a top line caliber winger away, still, right? And that's with me rating Connor Garland as a top pair caliber winger, right? Like, you're still a top pair caliber winger short, in my view. Now, Besser, DeBrusk, Garland, maybe you're close. Maybe you're closer than I think.
Yeah, second line, like another top six winger, you could argue.
It's just that driver guy. Like, Florida had Reinhardt, right? The Oilers had Hyman, right? 50-plus goals. Dallas has Robertson. The Rangers have Panarin and Lafreniere, right? I mean, it's that level of winger. Like, I think Besser's a really good player. I think he's a credible top-of-the-lineup caliber winger. But, you know, I think him, DeBrusk, share this trait where it's like they're really good at playing
with
top
centers.
You're
talking about, like, a star winger. As opposed to somebody who can play with stars. Yeah.
100%.
Like, that's why we spent so much time talking about Jake Guentzel last year, right? A true star winger.
Absolutely. And it's why I spent so much time talking about draft capital, right? The idea that, like, where else are you going to find these guys? The big swing guy that I thought this club still needed. Anyway, just a thing that I'm still sort of tracking here, because I think I had some of the big picture stuff, or my focus on the big picture, even as I liked the club's individual moves, sort of not blinded me, but put what this club could accomplish if you hit on a bunch of, like, small tactical maneuvers in bulk, right? Like, that was in my blind spot. I didn't understand how much of an impact that could have. And yet I still need to be convinced that the big picture strategy was kind of the one that should, or the one that could be followed to make bringing a cup to Vancouver the most likely outcome.
And Jay in Calgary texts in, and he says, is it just that they hit on every free agency signing and went on a big PDO bender, though? Maybe it would have been better to build around Hughes, PD, and Demko. And the first part of that is what stands out to me, right? Because if you're, you know, what you're talking about is, okay, we're choosing the not taking a step back. We're going to compete with this group. We're going to try to build a Stanley Cup contender. Totally, like, fair enough. Once you choose that, all of those depth free agency moves and signings become so, so important, right? So vital. And what we saw last year, a big part of the story last year was them absolutely nailing every single one, right? Even Ian Cole, whose play tailed off a little bit towards the end of the season and in the playoffs, I mean, he was huge for them early in the season, right? We all know, like, some of these guys are still on the team, obviously. Soucy, Suter, Bluger. One of the stories, again, of three games only, so it's far too early to chalk this up one way or the other, but is we're still waiting to see the impact from the guys they went out and signed this year. They made a bigger commitment to Jake DeBrusque. We're still really waiting to see that impact. But even, you know, the lower tier guys like Danton Heinen, Derek Forbort, Daniel Sprong, we're still waiting to see them have that kind of instant success or any success, right? Like the players that they brought in last year did. And I think one of the, again, one of the risks of this strategy is you have to be really consistently nailing those around the edges moves, right? Because you have to be getting every ounce of value you can out of those types of players to push you over the edge. Yeah. And that's going to be a huge part of this season as well.
Well, and I do think the other part of it that I wasn't wise to is just how much value this team could accrue by making such a high volume of moves in season, right? And I think that was such a key part. And I also think it's why, you know, we need to delay any sense that, like, this is a must win or how desperate should the club be? It's like, this club's going to look different by the end of November. You know what I mean?
And that's a huge, I think for me, who I think it's fair to say was at least a little bit higher on this team coming into this season than you are. A big part of it is that, because there's some teams where it's like, hey, we think, you know, Pettersson, Miller, Demko, and Hughes, and Besser, and Hronek, we think we've got a team good enough to push for the Stanley Cup, so here we go, and this is going to be our team. And they kind of sit on their hands, right? And they're too scared to make moves. A big part of my optimism is that I know Jim Rutherford and Patrick Helvin aren't like that, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
We're sitting here saying, man, they could really use another impact defenseman, another guy who moves the needle on the blue line. They know that. And they've also shown that when they know that and they think their team with those types of moves is going to be a legit Stanley Cup contender, they go out and get it done. So, like, a huge part of the reason to be optimistic, again, for me, is that knowledge that this probably isn't going to be the final version of the team. They're going to look for those opportunities to bring in the finishing pieces. Now, easier said than done, and you have to make the right moves, and they have to gel, and they have to fit like you hope they will, and all of those things. But I think you look at this group, and it's not as if them choosing to compete with this group isn't them saying, we're good enough to win a cup right now. It's, we're at least close enough that we have to see it through, and we're going to take some shots to put us over the edge.
And for sure. And you know, one sort of irony here, right, is what ended up in some ways holding them back in the playoffs last year, right? Because I actually think this team got, as I said, closer than I expected them to. A lot closer. But then you enter the playoffs and you're not even getting elite contributions from Pettersson.
Yeah.
And you get one game from Demko. And they still were able to perform the way they were able to perform. Now we're sort of here, and it feels like the thing that I was most confident in, which was the Canucks have, you know, an elite center and an elite defenseman under the age of 25, right? And what I'd grown to be unsure of were, are those guys going to be the best players on the next great Canucks team?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was one of the things that, like, you know, one common line that I'd deliver a year and a half ago or 2 years ago was things like, are we sure that Hughes isn't Vancouver's Morgan Riley and Pettersson's not Vancouver's Nazem Kadri? Like, are we sure of this? And, you know, I think they went out and answered that question pretty definitively, right? Like, Quinn Hughes is unquestionably a franchise cornerstone defenseman. But the Pettersson thing, you know, are we as confident as we were 2 years ago?
No, I don't think so. You can't be.
You can't be. Not after this 35-game stretch. Even if you still know that the odds are that he'll figure it out, you have to be wide-eyed and clear-eyed about just how much he's struggled here over the past 35 games. And so when we look at this and sort of think about this, it's like the struggles that Pettersson has had here, I think has in some ways undermined local confidence anyway in sort of like the one part or the one of the pillars of this team that we were most sure was in place in a lot of ways.
Well, to bring it back to the strategy discussion, if Pettersson isn't that player, then obviously the strategy isn't going to work.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the end of it.
Yeah.
And for as much as it can be, you know, we had people text in yesterday when we were having a lot of discussion about Pettersson, like, that they're finding it kind of draining almost, just the amount the conversation revolves around him. And I can understand that because, you know, obviously there's a lot of familiar terrain and the situation hasn't really changed much. But at the same time, I also get why it is a constant focus of conversation, because it's a binary thing. Like, either he gets back to being elite and this team has a chance to win a Stanley Cup with him and Quinn Hughes in this core, or he doesn't and the whole project is over, basically. Yeah. Like, maybe that's a little fatalistic, but it's not far off. If he is not elite, if he's not worth $11.6 million, then, yeah, the strategy is obviously not going to work out. That's it. Like, that's a foundational part of the strategy, is we're going to get amazing performances from Elias Pettersson.
The other sort of... I'm basically doing almost a clips show. We're doing a clips show version of Canucks Army, Canucks Talk Past. Canucks Army, my goodness.
You're going way back.
My origins are showing. The one of the classic metaphors we'd discuss was the idea of a highway versus a tightrope walk.
Mm.
You know, it's like to expertly walk the tightrope the way this team did. And then fracture your leg effectively, right? Sort of one of the things that we were most confident that this team had was Pettersson's dominance. And all of a sudden we're far less confident in that, with justifiably so. And another one was Thatcher Demko's an exceptional goaltender. And there's an enormous amount of uncertainty that's been introduced into that equation too. Not just for this year, but going forward. And I think that's been highlighted in some ways by this rush of goalie contracts and the idea of how does the current absence, but also the looming uncertainty about workload, re-injury risk, all of that stuff that we've been discussing, not understanding how to sort of talk about or how to factor in or how to price in, mm-hmm. in terms of our expectations for this team. How does that interact with the decision that this club will have to make? And Wish, you know, despite butchering his Bobrovsky points, alluded to this, which is that the one difference between the starter thing in baseball and the goaltending thing in hockey is that you get to the postseason, and guess what?
You ride your guy.
One guy.
Yep.
That's how teams do it. Maybe they shouldn't, but that's how teams do it. Like, is Demko even going to have the runway to show this team before he becomes extension eligible in July that he can be that guy? Like, are we even going to get there this season? Is it possible? Even if this team gets into the playoffs, is that something that the club's going to have to be mindful of? Again, we don't know. I'm not saying that we do. It's just an open question. And I think one that should be on top of our minds today, sort of given the news on the goalie market, the goalie extension market in the NHL right now.
Well, again, like, we didn't get too much into the, you know, what does the new goalie market mean for Thatcher Demko and the Canucks conversation, because we have no idea, right? We don't know until we get more information. He plays games for them, right? Until we see how he performs, all of those things. And then, as you said, even then we might not know how willing teams should be to bet on his health, right? You're right. He's extension eligible after this season, July 1st, but it feels very much like, you know, the earliest you could kind of responsibly do a deal with term for Thatcher Demko would be like January 2026. You know what I mean? Like, you'd at least have to see how he gets on the ice this year. Go, maybe if he's great, that's awesome. Plays a bunch of games, no injury, no re-injury, that's great. Then you still have to see how he does in the early part of next season, though, right? Before you could really go down that road. And then as to what that means and the injury history means for his AAV and all of that, I mean, I have no idea. Like, there's just so many blanks that we still have to fill in before we can even, like, begin to speculate what a next Thatcher Demko contract would look like. We have no idea right now, and we're not going to know. We're not going to know in the next 6 months, probably.
And so I think this brings us back to the uncertainty, not just around Demko, but of hockey in general, right? You're going to make mistakes. Things aren't going to go your way. You're not always going to run as purely as the Canucks did, you know, certainly for the first 4 months of last season, and you might extend it from the beginning of the season through to Demko's injury, right? You missed almost no games from core players as a result of injury, except your goaltender. You shot a historic percentage, you know, on and on. So many things went this team's way last year. And when things were going this team's way, right, that narrow path is walkable, is something that you can scale, especially when you've got a front office nailing the tactics, especially when you nail
yep.
head coaching hire, you know, especially when tactics and player acquisition are so nicely married, aligned, connected.
Holistic.
It all fits. Right? Then it's amazing what tactical moves, tactical maneuvers, smart tactics can accomplish. But when things start to go against you, injuries, a random star level, like superstar level player, all of a sudden sputtering for a prolonged stretch of time, like that tightrope walk, you know, you're basically putting weights on the bar that you're carrying. It becomes an awful lot more difficult to traverse effectively. And so I don't think we're there yet. It's way too early in the season for us to conclude one thing or the other. But I do think stemming from last season and as we went through this summer, this was a discussion that, you know, look, it was sort of irrelevant in comparison with what the club has done, how these new pieces will fit, what the training camp battles are going to look like. But I do think it's worth just bearing in mind or sort of hammering down as a signpost along the way of our discussion over the course of the season, because I do think it's something that, you know, we should be coming back to in the context of how close to contention, how close to meaningful, bona fide Stanley Cup contention can this team get?
All right, that does it for us today. By the way, Rick Tocchet has confirmed that Kevin Lankinen will start for the Canucks against Florida. No surprise there. Puck drop is at 4. Canucks Central with Sat and Reach is coming up next. They'll have your pregame coverage as well. Batch and Randeep have the call, and then it is Sat and Bick with your postgame show right here on Sportsnet 650.